hate to break it to you guys, but it is March 16th, 2019. This is Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
Why don't you just lie to our viewers? They don't need to know when we're actually recording.
They can know when we're recording anytime.
Yeah, and otherwise then it like commits me to a very specific date that this has to get up by. And what if I get hit by something? What if I get into an accident? Then the podcast has to wait until I get out of my coma.
If you ever do.
Oof. Damn, don't Scott wish that on me. Off.
But then we can have the like Patreon or the locked vault where people can pay to access the lost files.
You could just pay to access my comatose body. I think that would also be interesting.
That sounds like slightly more legally dubious. But since we do have you on audio pitching the idea yourself, I think my lawyer, Cookie Skimilk LLC,
hello,
can help me go ahead and win this case if we ever get caught up with any sort of legal fees. Would your family be okay with that? I don't know how mine would necessarily react.
Man, this conversation's starting to tap into my existential dread. So let's not go there. Instead of asking you two what you guys did this week, I'm going to go ahead and open up by saying what I did this week, which aside from work, I discovered, not really discovered, but I did have a deep dive into the subreddit known as No Sleep. And let me tell you, without having too much exposure beforehand, aside from reading a few stories, the idea behind No Sleep, and I am sure I'll be somewhat wrong in my description, is that it's a collection of stories that are usually not going to be real. And the idea is that they can be creepy, interesting, any sort of range like that, but it's a storytelling subreddit. And let me tell you, if you do not know about the rules within the subreddit before starting on this journey of reading these posts, it's kind of confusing, because to most people, you can immediately tell through these stories that they are not real, that they're, you know, fictitious tales to creep people out. Now, every reply that you usually get from some of these will be people like offering condolences or sympathy based upon the situation that the writers are usually in. So there was one I was reading that ended with, like, it was a person being experimented on in a hospital, and the final part of the No Sleep series, if you will, involves throwing the diary out of the window and hoping someone would pick it up, meaning that the person posting to No Sleep must have found this diary and has been posting the story in, you know, pieces to the subreddit. And then people would post things like, man, I was really hoping he would have gotten out. Like, my condolences, you're going through so much, and stuff like that. I found myself saying, like, wait a second. Like, this isn't just, like, this can't be a subreddit full of really gullible people.
No.
But, yeah, no, it is not. It's interesting because the rules essentially mean that you cannot call people out for being, like, fake. You're basically supposed to suspend your disbelief as soon as you enter the subreddit and just appreciate the stories.
So how many posts are like, hey, I'm real sorry you got murdered?
Surprisingly a low body count for at least original authors. That was a pretty clever way of actually wrapping up the story and indicating that, you know, hey, it turns out I was never really posting this myself, and it's some dude that found my journal. I don't know. It's actually a pretty cool subreddit that if you guys haven't checked out,
I don't do spooky stuff, but I appreciate the suggestion.
But you played Resident Evil. That's spooky.
That is as far as I go.
Spooky in like a greasy cheeseburger way.
He goes,
yeah, exactly.
He goes much spookier than I go.
I do?
Yeah.
Yeah. On our spectrum, I think we have Neil in the like darkness, and then I'm like at the edge of where the halo of light reaches, and then Cookie is surrounded by candles and spotlights, and he's just like, no fucking way.
It's funny because I feel like I do not do, I know I don't do well in scary games. Like, I am horrible at scary games.
Yeah, me too.
I'm actually pretty okay at scary games,
apparently, despite the fact that you're too much of a coward to play them. When we do force you to play them, you do fine.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, at that point, it's less about the scary and more about how scary I think it might turn into.
Hmm.
And our silent producer just sent in another subreddit called Shitty No Sleep. So
nice.
That looks interesting. I'll have to check that out. And then on top of that, I also started watching Gintama again, which I just have to probably give out my biannual endorsement for that show. The one thing that like I can always appreciate going back to it is like the fact that it's still historically grounded despite it being ridiculous in many ways. Like, especially around the idea of how Japan ultimately stopped its seclusionist policies and started to open itself up to trade and so forth in the 19th century, I believe. It's really interesting, too, because like while the show, for the most part, has the audience siding with the like the modern mentality behind Edo or Japan in this era, which is like, for the most part, dealing with the aliens that are occupying the occupational forces of all sorts of random and crazy aliens. It does paint two different sides to the anti-foreigners, which I think in a lot of ways are supposed to reflect the isolationists and seclusionists from the past. And being that you have some that are like peaceful isolationists or anti-foreigners, and then you have like the radical, extremely violent anti-foreigners. And we got through like one serious arc, and I found myself like realizing that Gintama as a whole does have like deaths from time to time, but for the most part is such an overly positive and cheerful show. It's strange because I find like basically no fault in such a show or in such a thing that has so fairy tale like endings to a lot of its arcs. But I kind of feel like I'm fooling myself into like this safe place because ultimately it feels like there is going to have to be some sort of inevitable clash between like the modernization of Japan or Edo, as they call it, and the ultimate goal of both anti-foreigner factions.
Oh, I actually do have a correction for the Edo part. I'm almost certain that Edo is actually the historical name for Tokyo.
Yes, I believe you're right.
Okay.
But I guess it's just that I don't know if they refer to Japan as a nation so much in the show. I could be wrong. They reference, and it seems like they don't even use Japanese as like an ethnicity so much as they actually use samurai, like identifying as samurai. And it could be the fact that the majority of the time you're following like the Shinsengumi and Gintoki, the main character, and then even like your straight man foil, Shinpachi, is like essentially trying to be or trying to follow like the samurai lifestyle, albeit in a very plain, modern, or boring way, while also appreciating his idols. If you're ever interested, I have a handful of episodes that you could watch just by themselves to give it a taste drive.
I've seen like an episode or two. And they were an absolute riot. And I've tried to watch the first episode, I think, on three different occasions and just had like a trickier time, I don't know, keeping my attention on it. I think partially because it's also, how old is this show? It's old enough that it's it's not in the widescreen format that we're familiar with most shows today. It is that like... almost square resolution.
3x4 aspect ratio?
You said 3x4, which if you just take that and you turn it 90 degrees, you're still right. That's the beauty of aspect ratios that are sort of symmetrical. But yeah, I'll watch it. I'll watch it sometime. I just need to have the opportunity to be... bored enough to start and then uninterrupted to actually complete the first episode or so.
There's a collection of posts out there or suggestions like for like
best episodes.
Yeah, like what episodes you can skip if you just want to do story and avoid filler. But like I do think there's a lot of awesome content within those filler episodes. Like the Hot Pot episodes all are so ridiculous, I mean, but offer nothing to the actual plot.
Yeah, I don't know if I care about plot in a particularly like comedic show anyway. There are a lot of very funny shows where a plot sort of moves forward over time, but I'm only paying a small amount to almost no attention to that because I'm in it for the jokes or the skits or the gags that are happening in that episode's time frame.
So I have a question. Since Scott said that he tried to watch the first episode on several occasions, I am also in that boat.
Yeah.
Of just like, okay, I'm going to watch this. Okay, I'm going to do something more interesting for me now. Okay. Is episode one just a filler episode? Or what are your episodes of like, here, start here.
Oh God. I would have to, I'd have to go back and actually see what the first 20 episodes were. To like know when a good starting point was. But like, I think even the show starts off on not the quote-unquote origin episode because they maybe identify that the origin or start of Gintama is not necessarily the best hook. And while I personally, like, if I'm going to get into a series hardcore like this, or hardcore is, I use that very loosely, I guess, here, I'm going to watch everything, you know? So I'm maybe not the best person to ask on that regard. But basically, like, once the Shinsengumi are introduced, which is essentially, like, the elite police force, and by police, I mean it's a bunch of people wearing black European-style clothing with swords running around with rocket launchers. Nice contrast. You either use a sword or shoot a rocket launcher. Once the Shinsengumi are introduced, it introduces, like, three awesome characters that have, like, unique relationships with the main cast, and that like really amplifies the amount of comical value you can get from it. There's probably an arc before they actually get fully into the story, though, that is probably not worth missing, and it probably involves Katsura, the like one of the main faces of the anti-foreigner movement. But anime, that's my anime talk for today. What have you guys been up to this week?
I, too, have anime talk. Scott, do you have anime talk?
I don't think so. Okay. Yeah, I'm just keeping up on what's going on. So nothing special to note, unless you guys have been keeping up with the Promised Neverland.
I really need to sit down with Lizzie one day and start watching more of it. We liked it, but we kind of got busy with life. But
oh, man. Actually, Neil, I introduced Sierra to Hinamatsuri, and it was just an excellent choice. I didn't realize how much I enjoy that the show, due to the massive power that the characters have, at least the psychokinetic characters. Well, even like Anzu, and not just Hina. When they dispatch any sort of enemy, it's always the same gag where the enemy goes, "Aita," which is ouchie. And so they'll like clear a building full of people and you'll just hear, "Ouchie, ouchie, ouchie." And it's such a great way to like completely diffuse the violence of the situation and turn it into a comedic gag. And I just really, I appreciated that element of it because even with, I think, otherwise like comedically laden shows about telekinetic superpowers like Mob Psycho, there is some humor to the violence, but they do it in a different way where instead of, I think, like limiting the impact of the actual, act taken upon another human being, it's like the contortion of them or the complete like overpowering of them that's funny in that scenario, while in Hinamatsuri it just seems like it's a much more tame element. And the fact that they reused the joke I think at least 3 to 4 times in the first 2 episodes and it still lands each time is kind of a testament to how there's an alternative to writing it that can be, I would say, just like a lot more friendly to a younger audience. I don't know if you necessarily want a younger audience watching about a kind-hearted Yakuza member.
that just but, wants to increase his vase collection.
Yeah, oh my God, that vase collection
was awesome.
I like how lighthearted and charming this show is, and I forgot how it really plays upon that formula in a way that is just more accessible to people outside of the action elements that like Mob Psycho has, and it makes it a good alternative for sort of the same, I guess, the same framework of humor. But yeah, that's all I have to say about anime this week. There's nothing too special going on otherwise.
I could dig it. Thanks for answering that question for me.
Thanks for asking the question.
My anime talk is, I was recently having a discussion with a friend about like politics and TV shows, and that got me wanting to rewatch Log Horizon, and I forgot how much I fucking love that fucking show. Because it's not really about them being trapped in the world. It's more about the politics of them being trapped in the world. And I love it. I love it so much that I think I'm going to actually read the light novel.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then with the new update for the PlayStation that just happened, you can now stream on your iOS devices. And I think that's going to be the perfect medium to play Steins Gate, the light novel video game. What do you call those, Neil?
It's a visual novel, yeah.
Visual novel.
Dude, if you start playing it, then, well, you've already seen the show, but that might kick my own butt into gear to start playing Steins Gate as well.
Yeah, it's a good update. I was playing Divinity Original Sin 2 on the on my iPad, because that's a game that you don't need Twitch-like reflexes to play. But, so yeah, anime-wise, just rewatching that one show that I just mentioned that I forgot the name of already.
That one show. Log Horizon.
Yes, so, Log Horizon.
I am curious. It does seem kind of weird to play Steins Gate on your phone off of your PlayStation 4. Like, maybe there's some added benefits to it. Because I thought Steins Gate was also available on mobile, like iOS and Android, too.
It might be. I have no idea. I know I got it for free on the PlayStation, so...
Yeah, may as well take advantage of it. The only problem is, like, I guess maybe you don't want to necessarily go to this length, but you can't, unless it's been proven otherwise, despite their official release, you cannot play... you can't do the remote play off of cell data.
You cannot.
So you at least have I don't to be think in your you can. House.
Well, you have to be in a house with Wi-Fi.
Wait, oh, seriously, you can actually be at someone else's house, go through your Wi-Fi. It's not like LAN prohibited.
Or nope, just a really beefed up coffee shop Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it connects through the internet, not through the Wi-Fi network.
You can only play 30-minute increments at your local Starbucks, and then you have to wait 5 minutes before reconnecting again.
Yeah. But well, yeah, you know, so, you have to take turns with the guy in the corner watching porn, so...
So, yeah, I want to give Steins Gate a try, since if I'm actually sitting at my PlayStation, I'm not going to want to play a visual novel. No offense to visual novels. But
I don't understand why that is. It's like you're basically doing the same thing as if you were just watching a TV show.
Yeah, but if I'm sitting at my PlayStation, I'm going to be playing something interesting.
What I understand about it, Cookie, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's something about like the potential power of having your console or something and doing a very like low effort task with it that makes it feel almost trivial.
Wasteful?
Yeah. You're like, I could be playing a really, like, a game that's really hard on my processor right now, and that's why I've stopped playing Agger.io, because
It's more, I could be playing a game that's going to really test my dexterity and skill hand-eye coordination,
If you are speed running one of those visual novels, you got to be able, and you have to read every piece of text. You got to be really quick on that X button to progress forward.
So what you're telling me is that if you had psychic powers like Saiki Kusuo, you would end up using them all over the place because they're at your fingertips. Why not make use of them?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd be less like Mob and more like Saiki. No, I'd be just trying to live a normal life, but also every little aspect of my life will be powers.
No, it sounds like you'd be more of a Mob villain, a Mob psycho villain.
Yeah, it sounds like you'd be toppling governments.
Like, Saiki doesn't want to use his powers. He only uses them when he needs to keep his life normal.
That makes sense. So I wouldn't be toppling governments. You guys would just never see me. Because why would I be here? Because honestly, if I had Psyche's powers, I'd just be elsewhere all the fucking time. All the time. And then just rob a bank or two. All right, just hypnotize someone into giving me free shit. Oh, but then I'd have to like hypnotize CEOs. Fuck, I am going to be toppling governments. Fuck.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm going to be a supervillain if I ever get psychic powers, like strong enough psychic powers to where I can live a life of luxury.
You know, we never see in media any supervillains who do it just because it's like, well, hey, I have the ability and like, what else am I going to do? Run the rat race? No, thanks.
Pretty much. It's like,
I want to see one that's just like, well, I'm kind of thrust. The role is thrust upon me. I might as well follow through. But they're really not sold on anything. They don't have a strong or particular ideology. They're just like, why did I climb this mountain? Because it was there.
Yeah, pretty much. That'd be a really intriguing like villain or something for me. It's just like, I want to live a life of luxury, but in order to do that, I also need to be able to feed and clothe myself. And in order to feed and clothe myself, I need money. But I also don't want to work for the money, but I also don't really want to do like anything like super illegal. So I'm just going to do these like blue collar crime, like illegal things.
Wait, blue collar crime? You mean like robbing banks and stuff as opposed to white collar?
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. White collar crime.
Okay.
And then you'll have less, like, you'll have ultimately less jail time for doing white collar crime.
Thank God. I mean, for all we know, we actually live in a world where there are superpowers, but they're all intelligent enough to commit white collar crimes.
Just look at Elon Musk.
Has he done anything illegal aside from the accusations of inside trading?
Not that we know of.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to give him credit for being smart enough to hide anything.
Touche. So besides wanting to actually live the visual novel life / read a light novel about MMORPG isekais, I am now officially selling my large speaker system.
You mean the DJ system or the rest of it, I take it?
Yeah, the PA system, the customs and the mixer and everything with it. Because we ended up getting a Sonos surround sound system for the basement. And that's just a lot better. It's just a lot better. It doesn't get as loud, but it's everywhere and also surround sound. And with the new system downstairs, I was able to move one of the Sonos speakers upstairs. So now I can play music in both areas at once and they're synced. And isn't that just every DJ's ultimate goal? To be able to play one song everywhere, synced up. Apparently with Alexa integration. I forget, she listens down here now.
Oh, God.
With the computer's integration, you can drop in on people. So you have to be careful with what rooms you have
synced
the A device.
Alexified?
Yeah, because like it'll just ring twice and then immediately it'll say such and such is dropping in, and then they'll be able to listen and hear everything. You don't have to answer, they just drop right in.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like I don't understand why you have willingly set up a spy network on yourself. Basically,
there's no such thing as privacy in an interconnected world.
I was gonna say, I've got Facebook, so everyone's got everything on me anyway. through my Facebook, I found my old MySpace page.
That's right.
That was exciting. None of the audio, like none of the old songs work, which is sad though.
Yeah.
They lost all that data. But I'm fine with this. But yeah, so I'm so connected. I'm not worried about like VPNs or things like that because I'm on the grid. I'm waiting for the day they just let me digitize myself. I'm waiting for the Sword Art Online moment. I want to be a part of that.
I think we're going to be a generation too early for that, unfortunately.
I know, and that makes me sad.
I don't know if that's unfortunate.
That is unfortunate. I want to be in that situation. Maybe.
He wants to have a digital child that then becomes a fairy and then gets turned into a robot in the real world. I don't know. That plot's too convoluted for me to follow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what happened to her, right? Yeah. Either way, doesn't matter. So yeah. That's kind of been my week. Just new systems. The big 3D printer is running into this error that I have purchased things for to try and fix, but it's still got that error, so it might just be bricked. I'm going to call out to their tech support on Monday after work to see if they got any advice for me besides just set the thing on fire.
This is the one you got used recently, right? Or the last few months?
No, this is the first one that I got, the like super huge one.
Oh, okay. I thought you had sold that
not
one.
Not the resin printer. I was trying to sell it, and I was going to sell it. I got like hits on it, and then it got the error 0040, which means the SD card, for whatever reason, is not all the way engaged. But the component that they use to hold in the SD cards, you know how you can push it in, it clicks into place, and then you push it in to eject it. It doesn't do that. And I don't have the right type of soldering iron to remove said thing and replace that piece.
Is it just a metal piece to like displace it sort of on a spring? Or
it is not. And you know how I know it's not? Because when I took the thing apart, on the back of the SD card, there was a piece of double-sided tape to kind of help it stick in. And then a piece of rubber that was attached to the actual PCB board on a piece of double-sided tape to help lock the SD card in.
Mm.
So even they knew. Even they knew. So yeah, so that's what I'm living with right now. So Scott, what have you been up to?
Hey, do you remember when I told you guys that my hockey team was going to win the Novice League Championships?
No.
Oh, well, wait, I did say that.
So start with the first round if you're not or weren't planning on
Oh
it.
Yeah, that's right. First round we won. Second round we knocked out the number one team, the number one seed. Third round I missed because apparently it was on a Tuesday and I checked the schedule on the Wednesday night afterward to find out that I had missed a game and
what?
We lost because we did not have a bench. Yeah, I mean, I thought that the schedule was set up so we were playing only on Sundays. And so I checked to see if we had a hockey match the day after it had actually occurred for round three. And apparently five other of my teammates, out of only a team that has like 15 people, also didn't make it. And so we had like a completely exhausted bench and... I don't know if we got stomped or we just barely lost, but I know that we did not make it. So my hockey season fizzled out without me even knowing that it was truly over until a day later.
What the fuck? How does that happen? How did you guys not get called?
It happened because our captain tore his ACL earlier in the year. And I don't know, was more lax about the games and I somehow got left out of a group text. And so
you and five other guys.
I didn't even know it was happening until it had already happened. And so I went to check because I went to tell my folks when my next match would be if they want to watch us win the playoffs, and then realized that I didn't have to bother them with that information because we had already lost the day before.
Wow.
Kind of a weird experience. Very funny, I thought. But it's not this year. It's going to have to be next year. Oh, no, the rest of my team's probably pissed. I don't know. I haven't talked to them because I'm not in the group chat.
So you just ghosted them. Way to go.
Sure. I mean, I didn't mean to. It was a complete accident. But yeah, so I said that if we would lose, I wouldn't bring it up at all. But due to the, I think, pretty humorous circumstance, it was worth talking about.
Remember that, guys? Oh, you meant to your teammates. Okay. If we lose, I'm not going to talk about this ever again, team.
No, I talked about it on the... Yeah, that I wouldn't talk about it on the podcast. I guess there's next year.
I mean, if you're allowed back on the team.
5 other people didn't make it. I think I'm covered.
I don't know.
It's kind of wild circumstance.
I'm proud of you, Scott.
My work is also trying to put together a softball team, and I'm trying to become the pitcher, even though I've never pitched in baseball or softball in my life.
The first thing you should ask is if there are games on Tuesdays.
I should just ask when there's games. But yeah, my winter sports league is over, and so that's the only funny or entertaining stuff that I've done this week. Otherwise, work has been like hellaciously stressful, and I am so psyched for the weekend.
I'm sorry that work was stressful.
That's okay.
I knew for the weekend.
I knew it was coming.
At some point today, I'll be going back into the office. Hey, yo.
I will not. Oh, I guess I forgot to mention. I got some of my nails painted.
Wait, some of your nails? Are there nails that you excluded from this painting?
Well, my thumb and my middle finger. And
so you can hand this entirely. You can flip people off without giving them the courtesy of seeing your nicely done nails.
Yeah. Apparently, there's this new fad going around. You know how like the women were all into lip scents for a while, and Mary Kay.
Wait, what is
other
that?
Things.
No, I do not know about any of this.
Like, despite what everyone thinks about me everywhere, like you were talking to a non-hipster. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
So think Mary Kay. Do you guys know what Mary Kay is?
No.
Oh yeah, I know. I know what it's.
Is she like a character on Little House on the Prairie?
No, Mary Kay is how you get pink cars. I know that much.
They no longer do the pink cars, but
that's bullshit.
Yeah, they're black now. Either way, so Mary Kay is like an old school. You get the housewife who buys the Mary Kay products, which are
It's a pyramid scheme. Okay, sure.
Yeah, it's a pyramid scheme stuff. So they buy the makeup, and it's supposed to be trickle down economics, quote unquote. Recently, in the last couple of years, there's this new one called Lip Sense, which is just
lips,
lip gloss, basically. Now there's a new one that's about nail painting, nail polish, basically. This stuff cures in a minute,
which is really fast for nail polish, from what I understand.
Which is very fast for nail polish. Very fast for pretty much anything, honestly.
How bad of a migraine does it give you, though, for smelling those chemicals?
Actually, they're pretty tame and odorless. Like, I get more odors out of my spray paint.
Mm.
Plus, since it cures in a minute, it's just like, whoop, whoop.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the odor's probably gone at that point.
Yeah, they throw it under the UV light, and then it's like, bam, 1 minute, you're gone.
Wait, they're UVing you?
Kind of. Yeah, basically. They say it's just an LED light, but the LED light is the same exact color as my UV lamp that I have for carrying my, what's that thing called? My resin prints.
Mm, okay.
So I'm just like, it's a UV LED.
Yeah, it's not like they're lying to you, I guess. It's still an LED light. Just happens to be UV.
They're just gently irradiating you.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they pretty much say, oh yeah, we use an LED light. And it's like, an LED light's just
a light.
A type of light bulb. What kind of light are you using? Just any LED light. But use this specific one, our like our nail cure that comes with the kit. So our friend is, one of our friends is like selling all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we had dinner with them recently. And while at dinner, she was like, oh yeah, Lizzie, try these nail polishes.
Join my MLM.
So the dinner was actually just a sales pitch.
Yeah.
More or less, kind of.
Did she buy any?
No.
Okay, good.
Okay, you guys did pretty well then.
Oh, don't worry. She'll buy some later. I know she will. Ooh. She got completely hooked into the LibSense.
You guys are continuing to feed the problem here, all right?
Yep. You know how many LibSense containers Lizzie has? Too many. But it's good because she never got sucked into selling it, which is the real issue.
Yeah, that's true. Because then you buy a bunch of product you can't
move.
It's
like, just as long as you support the criminals.
See,
yeah,
but
it's fine.
Here's really the thing. It's not big LibSense that we need to worry about. It's big UV bulb.
But yeah, so I ended up trying some of their different products. It's pretty cool.
The colors look nice.
Yeah, I got a pink. I got a green. I got a pink with blue purplish polka dots.
I cannot see the green at all. It just looks like you smashed a nail.
Smashed a nail.
It's
bad lighting.
Now I can see it. That looks pretty good. I like that green.
Yeah, it's a really nice green. I wasn't a fan of the green until like the day after.
It matches your lounge robe.
It does.
For our listeners, Cookie has a beautiful sage green lounge robe that is, I guess it's a podcast staple at this point.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to be on our anything that we record video footage of from now on, because fuck it.
We are 40 minutes into this podcast, minus the 5 or 10 minutes that it took for us to like all start recording.
I mean, this is what editing's all about, Neil.
Yeah, apparently. Let's talk about some video games.
Let's roll into some games. All right, I'm going to go ahead and hijack the conversation here because what I want to talk about is important to me, but it's probably pretty quick. I've been playing Hollow Knight for quite a while. I think the last time I talked about it, it was just word soup about my experience so far. And I haven't listened to that episode yet to find out if you did the right thing and cut out all of that dialogue or left it in. I have much more composed thoughts this time around on a very specific element of the game.
When people are passionate about what they want to talk about, I leave it in.
That's a mistake because I was just filling time. But this is something that I'm passionate about, and it's especially come to mind for me after looking at Hollow Knight's map as I'm navigating around and playing the game for a second time. I'm not using a particular, oh my gosh, why can't I think of what it's called? The pins or totems or whatever like slot system you use to modify your abilities has a badge. I think it's a badge system, really. Has a badge that essentially gives you a compass marker that allows you to know exactly where Hollow Knight is on relation to the map. And I've really not used it for this playthrough. And that's because I've been much more confident with how I can read the map. But I think also an element to it is that their map is actually very, very good. And comparing it to the old 2D Metroid games that I've played, as well as some like good Castlevania maps that have been described to me by Neil and that I've like looked up to double check, Hollow Knight does this really wonderful thing where instead of going to a map room like in Metroid, or I don't actually know how you unlock knowledge of rooms or the map system in Castlevania. Could you fill that in real quick, Neil?
You walk into it.
Okay,
and
so
then
you,
it's there.
You have to discover the room. Okay. I like that between Castlevania and Metroid, I like the idea of being presented with essentially a shell of the like map space when you go into a map room, because there are still secret areas that the map does not denote that you have to find by destroying a wall or finding a hidden passage or like some other method of like discovering secret areas, meeting some sort of criteria to move into a space that is not actually designated on your map overview screen. However, in Hollow Knight, what you do is you navigate an area and you can't actually fill in any of the spaces you visited until you find the
map maker.
The map maker, Cornifer. And if you find, you'll hear him sing from about a room away as he scrawls away at a map, and you can see map pages to try and, or pages of like notes that you can track down to try and find him to update the map. And when you do receive the map, you fill in all of the spaces that you have previously visited as soon as you sit down at a bench. But when you get it, you get a rudimentary outline of the space that Cornifer is drawing the map for. And each region has a map that associates to it. And there's really quite a few regions. I think there's at least a dozen that you find thanks to Cornifer. There's Green Path, Fog Canyon, Queen's Garden, Deep Nest, City of Tears. Yeah, there's close to a dozen, maybe a little less than that. But what happens when you find these maps is you're given a layout just like a Metroid or a Castlevania game, where it's essentially just squares or a geometric representation of the map that shows you the size and relative orientation of the rooms that Cornifer has seen, and once you sit down at a bench, also any of the rooms that you have seen. However, as you navigate through these areas, similar to the Castlevania and Metroidvania models, any new rooms that you encounter after you sit down at a bench to update your map, which is also a resting or save station that allows you to refill your health and save the game at a safe point, you fill in these extra spaces that you found, any hidden passages, and the connections between those rooms and the rooms that were previously written in on the map. Where this differs from Castlevania and Metroid games is that these maps not only have a system where you can see in a rough outline rooms you haven't visited yet that are on the original map, you also get details filled into both these rough outlines as well as the navigated areas as you continue through the game. So for example, there is an area in the game called the Fungal Wastes, and at a certain point in the like bottom left-hand corner of the Fungal Wastes, there is an arena where you fight a boss and sort of a hidden village. And there are scribblings or sketches on the precursor map before you fill it in for another location that is nearby that has a notable like landmark. And so you know that this landmark is here before you even ever come up to it. While in Castlevania and Metroid maps, you have blue room, pink room. And blue room lets you know you visited a room. Pink room lets you know that you have not visited it. But none of these ever show any form of landmarks, and they don't allow you to really conceptualize or remind yourself what exists in some of these larger rooms. And what Hollow Knight does really well is instead of also giving a very like square and grid-like map, there's more organic shape to it. And so your brain it has a much easier time actually superimposing what the layout of the rooms that you visit are onto the overworld map, which you can pull together, or I should say the regional and overworld maps, which you can actually pull out with the LB button at any point in time while playing the game, or sit down at and actually mark and add markers to if you're sitting at a bench. And this makes the navigation, I think, much, much easier. And it's a spectacular way for them to do some very minor tweaks to make navigating across a space much, much easier than in the games that it takes a lot of inspiration, or the, I guess, the precursor map types to what Hollow Knight has created. The kind of last note I have about that as well is that they also change up the map in a way that I haven't encountered very much in Metroid games, but Neil has alluded to in talking about certain Castlevania games. There's one in particular where if we can go into spoiler territory, it's Symphony of the Night that has the castle, correct? I mean, mm-hmm. I guess all Castlevanias have a castle. It's in the title. Symphony of the Night has a conversion that happens to the map, I assume at a halfway or three-quarter point way in the game, that essentially changes how you navigate these all of the individual rooms and the overall space, from what I understand. And in Hollow Knight, as you play this game, they also have modifications that occur to the map that really change the navigation elements in one area in particular as you continue. Not only do you make shortcuts, but there actually become paths that are blocked following story reasons in the game, where what would have been easy access now in a sort of central hub area of the game all of a sudden becomes sort of a blocked path in which you have to utilize the new shortcuts and pathways that you've developed over exploring the like entirety of Hollow Nest to navigate around, in addition to the fast travel points that you continually unlock as you progress through the game. I guess as I've played this, as I've now put in probably another 15 to 20 hours on this game, I can't think of a better Metroidvania game that I've played with just a very intuitive and accessible map. And I really hope that AAA developers take a look at what this very small indie team has done at making what are really, when it comes to the amount of work, extremely like minute and easy tweaks to completely revitalize using a map in a game that is meant for you to traverse across the space over and over in a variety of different pathways.
It wouldn't be accurate for me to call it backtracking, but you do reuse the same environments.
I think it's absolutely backtracking.
So, okay, with that in mind, do you think that Bloodborne does an equally good
Bloodborne
job?
Doesn't have a map.
Right, but I mean, I understand there's no map, but you also don't really need a map in the type of game that you're playing in Bloodborne. But I mean, like,
I disagree.
I've talked about this before. I feel like Bloodborne and Dark Souls,
the first Demon's Souls
in particular, are basically the natural progression of technology and the Metroidvania formula coming together. And I don't necessarily think that the map is as necessary for those games, or it could be a design choice to not give the player a map.
I think From Software makes... Oh, go ahead, Cookie.
I was going to say, I don't think for anything that's not like a 2D game that has such complex maps as map designs as Bloodborne and the Dark Souls games, from what I've played, those, I don't know how you would do a very legible, readable map on those types of games.
Yeah, it'd have to be a shitty map, basically. Unintentionally shitty map.
I 100% agree, and I think what Cookie's getting at here is it seems like a conscious omission or avoidance of a map, especially in From Software games. There's supposed to be this element of mystery and exploration and familiarizing yourself not only with your enemies, but with the environment itself.
Right, and my question isn't necessarily related to the map, the illustration itself, but how you talk about reusing the same environments again. I'm just curious if you think that Bloodborne and Dark Souls, not including 2, because they don't necessarily implement it
2's,
as well.
Yeah, 2's very, I guess it's linear or radial in the sense that your hub world essentially branches off into many linear paths that will loop back on themselves, but very few of them actually interconnect with other paths that deviate from the central hub.
It's kind of like a wagon wheel, yeah.
Absolutely, I totally agree. It's a wagon wheel where maybe 2 spokes may connect, or even there is a spoke that connects both to one to its right or left, but besides that, the connection, it stops there. You ultimately reach a dead end at each one of these spokes. Like, they terminate, they don't actually hit the outer circumference of the wheel and connect with other spokes very frequently. So it's a very bad wagon wheel. It's been broken by its trips across the Oregon Trail.
It's that I get like I get the point you're making regarding the map itself, the map. And when I say map design, I don't mean like the actual settings, but the actual map and how they implement it into the game.
A physical map. Or
I'm just curious because like the way that the map goes hand in hand with the gameplay of Hollow Knight is something that like I don't know. And when you reference specifically AAA developers, I don't know how many opportunities AAA devs are going to necessarily have with that sort of added information, because a lot of games do not yield themselves to being able to utilize simplistic maps anymore.
Here is the AAA developer that I'm calling out specifically, and that is Retro Studios, which has made Metroid Prime, Metroid Prime 2, and Metroid Prime 3, and is now making Metroid Prime 4. These games have a three-dimensional wireframe map that does about the same thing that the 2D maps demonstrate. I don't actually even think that they necessarily have keys that show where you've found, like, or where an energy tank or a missile tank is necessarily hidden in the environment. And so in that capacity, they are more ambiguous, but because they don't just show boxes of or like rectangles of varying length, they do actually have the wireframe shape of rooms. That helps somewhat. However, if you go back and play Metroid Prime 1 especially, its map is terrible. It's really, really bad. The like interconnection and backtracking happens a lot. And I love this game, so I don't want to just shit on it having a bad map. Like,
I mean, it was distinct.
Yeah.
It's easy to look back with look in hindsight and analyze all of these flaws. Like, for the time, it was not great, but also what was better.
Yeah, and I think they've improved it. I do believe they improved on the level design quite a bit with Metroid Prime 2 Echoes, which had this very different approach in which you essentially had two maps bundled into each area, a light world and dark world component, and then later a fast travel system that you could operate within at the very end of the game in the light world. They did a good job of making the overall like physical 3D space that you navigate across, not on the map screen, but as a character, I think much better designed, and the maps therefore were easier to read because of that. However, and this also may lend to the fact that the Metroid Prime games have a platforming element. They have rooms in which there are multiple ways to access different areas. And that's actually relatively unique for a lot of third-person and first-person AAA titles. That outside of Legend of Zelda, Metroid is probably the next like biggest game that Nintendo produces that has you really like navigate through multiple entrances and exits to many locations throughout the game. And I'm having a hard time coming up with other examples off the top, but what this does is it kind of demands a need for a map in these games to some extent, because in your games like Dark Souls, in your games like Bloodborne, you're working across areas that you're on a ground floor, and you can either drop down to a lower floor or you can like climb stairs or a ladder to get to another space. But your mobility across a like vertical space is very limited in comparison to a game like Metroid or even Legend of Zelda. When they add the hook shot, you have a little bit more navigation that is possible in a vertical space, but it's still limited to where they add points that you can move up and down, as opposed to being able to freely jump from like platform to platform in a Metroid game, or like swing across a ravine with a grappling hook, or even at the very end of these games, use the, I think it's the screw attack, where you can essentially jump it almost an infinite distance if you hit the B button with right timing across any portion of the map. There's still limitations to this movement, but it is a lot more free, and the maps are a lot more larger in their options and choice than other games that I've played. And so by making a really easily legible map, and one that allows you to fundamentally understand the orientation of your environments more, I feel like it makes you experience a lot less of the, like, I'm lost and don't know what to do. And now that I'm 400 rooms revealed into this game, I can't backtrack and check every single room with this new item to see what I can use.
So what do you think of this map? I just uploaded a map from Kingdom Hearts 3, which is going to be more of those AAA developers in a 3D space, not much.
Is this a map from like a guide, or is this a map within the game itself?
In-game.
In-game?
An in-game map that identifies where the hidden Mickeys are at?
That seems wild to me.
Well, maybe in-game.
I don't... There's no way that there... I don't think you'd be given this visual. That seems weird. Yeah. And especially because, like, the font choice in particular also... Like, the fact that Mickey is not capitalized, this feels like it's a... Feels like it's
never mind. Yeah,
strategy
you're right.
guide. So I was going to say, like,
bootleg Kingdom Hearts.
I was going to say that the first thing to point out is that, like, if this were like a map used in game, like this map looks horrible. Maybe you can zoom in and get a better. I'm sure you could probably zoom in and get a better tangible idea. It does use different shades of blue to illustrate the terrain. I imagine, which would be a little more helpful.
At least the verticality. I will say that because our listeners cannot see this map, I don't know how much we can talk about it effectively.
Right.
This is what the in-game map looks like. Copy.
Okay.
So, while that's loading up, are we still talking about the illustration of the map and not so much level design?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I still want to talk about illustration of a map versus level design.
So this is closer to what the in-game map actually looks like.
I think that's better.
Ignore the squares. Yeah. It has the like differences in elevation and what can be explored as you're going.
Yeah, it's sort of topographical.
So is this kind of like what you're thinking in your idea of what AAA developers can do with non-Metroid type games?
Yeah, or even Metroid type games could, I think, really... I think as these games progress, they did start to show, like, if you have a room with a giant tree in it in Metroid, the wireframe model, I think, now shows the shape of the room, but also the space in the middle that is blocked out by the tree, that is, like, obviously inaccessible terrain. I think that this could be helpful in games that have large maps with multiple pathways that also have like some sort of platforming element to them. And so there aren't a huge amount of games for that, but just thinking about it for Metroid Prime 4, which is getting completely reworked, I think this is it's a relevant time for the topic. And like this Kingdom Hearts map looks relatively clear. I think this is easy to understand, and although I don't know what even like level or world this is, I can get a general idea of how you would move through it or where a developer might hide secrets within it. Things like that, that are just suggested by the shape of the map, which is really good. And when I think about, now that I think about Breath of the Wild, that's another game that I think has a very, very good map.
But it's also hard to actually evaluate maps from game to game, especially when the maps are trying to achieve different goals.
Yes, and the mode of movement is entirely unique between game to game.
Like Breath of the Wild, I would argue, has a map only because of the grand scale of the world. Like,
it's a good example of a map compared to, say, the map of open world game The Witcher 3 or open world, Far Cry, whatever.
Right. So like, if we think about why a map exists, and if I wanted to go David Cage on it, I could say maps show the limitations of the game's design, or some bullshit like that. But really, though, the map is meant to be used as a utility to aid the player in whatever reason for basically something regarding the game's design. So, like in Breath of the Wild, while the map does allow you to go pretty finite, like the biggest purpose of the map in Breath of the Wild is to show essentially where you are in relation to the rest of the world. And it's not necessarily used to like find, and this is specifically Breath of the Wild, of course, it's not really used to find like the very specific nooks and crannies at which you need to go.
Sort of. I will provide the counterpoint that the shape of locations in the map can often suggest like points of interest very easily. When you see a pond that also happens to be heart-shaped, you may not be able to actually see that from the like pinnacle of your, I don't know what those towers are called again, but your Sheikah Tower. You may not be able to see that object very clearly, but when you look on the map, you're like, oh, this is a very unique shape for this body of water. I should check this out. There's another location I can think of in which there is sort of a, topographically, there is like a skull face that is made out of the ground. And that's actually where the Shrine of Wisdom is, I believe.
You can also locate mazes, like the mazes that way as well. But like in the grand scheme of things, the amount of times you're using the map in that case are much more finite compared to its general use point. Like in contrast,
that's a fair point.
In contrast to like original Zelda games or like Link to the Past, for instance, you're using that map. Like, it literally has two different map systems. The overworld map, which you, again, use from, a very similar standpoint to Breath of the Wild. And then you have
then
the dungeon maps.
Map.
And, yeah. Like...
Oh, okay.
And so those dungeon maps are much closer to what you would expect from, like, a Metroidvania game. And in Metroidvania games, the maps are, I mean, used to essentially help you be a completionist and also to fucking tell you where you need to go next. Determine, like, mm-hmm. what locations. Because... at least with early Metroidvania games, especially, the terrains and the maps themselves are not unique enough in their geography and shape and design that you would know exactly where you were if it was your first time through. In contrast to, and again, I make this comparison only because I see like the connection between Castlevania and Dark Souls, but in Dark Souls, instead of giving you a map, they work very hard to create such unique geography and environments to essentially, and not to mention, they also force you to learn the maps as part of its gameplay. So,
yeah, and as a technologically limited game too, Dark Souls really focused on having focal points that you could look at from a distance and orient yourself around at like all points in time. That later, like once you started unlocking shortcuts, really suggested how compiled the world was together.
As we're talking about this, and I find myself asking, is Metroid Prime 4 actually going to be Metroid Prime 4, or is it going to be, I mean, like, ignoring what the title actually
is. Or is it going to be Metroid
is,
Other M 4?
Or is it going to be a new Metroid experience entirely? Especially because, and I only say this because, like, every other series has experienced a recent renaissance.
Yeah.
And... like so much so that even though retro still exists and is still like a you know part of the wheelhouse for Nintendo Studios, they decided to give Metroid Prime 4 to a different studio, and that seems like a very conscious decision. Granted, it apparently did not work out well.
Yeah,
but I'm wondering if a first person Metroid game is going to follow the same Metroidvania things that it's known for before. Or if we're actually going to see a game that starkly stands out to be its own experience as a whole.
Right, and then we end up getting the Metroid Prime Master Samus collection on Steam.
Oof. Before we jump into that, Cookie...
thanks for digging into the map madness with me. I didn't actually realize it was going to be this deep of a topic.
See, before we hit news, Cookie, what have you been playing?
Division 2 just came out, and literally on Friday, unless you bought the $100 edition. So, not much to say. Played a little bit, a couple hours this morning. I do like the fact that between the beta and the actual game, I've replayed some of the missions that I got to play in the beta. And for the most part, they're like the same, but spawn points are now different. So it kind of changes up the gameplay feel just a little bit. So that's really all I've got for video games.
All I've heard so far about The Division 2 is that this is actually just a good example. So far, at least, we don't know how exactly the end game content's going to be, but it seems like it's a good loot shooter.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Like, me and Darius are still in the... me and my brother Darius are in the early phases of the game. Plizzy hasn't had a chance to boot hers up yet. But as of right now, it's like exciting that everything we pick up, we do like immediately check our inventory because it could be something with better numbers and our better stats. And it's just really enjoyable being able to like be in a looter shooter again for once. I'll have to tell you how the grind gets.
Did you play Destiny 2 as well?
Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry. I just, these Destiny 1 and 2 especially get very mixed together with me. So like Destiny 2 is a good game in regards to like its core fundamental design and mechanics and so forth, but like it seems to have fallen off more in like the late game aspect of it, right?
Yeah, as a looter shooter, Destiny in general, Destiny 2 got a lot better in the idea of how its loot-based mechanics are implemented, but with Destiny 2, kind of the issue that I ended up having with it after beating everything was the repetition of getting through the grind because we didn't have like a dedicated team for raids. So it became, hey, we'll do like the dailies, the weeklies, attempt the weeklies on the harder difficulties to get the better loot. But the loot was not, but the gameplay loop wasn't worth the actual loot that we were getting. And since they were like, everything's great because you can raid now, and in order to raid, though, you need a highly coordinated group of 6 to 12 people, we are going to introduce this beautiful system of you can jump in with a random group to raid with. And I really like that idea of, hey, if you're like a group of 3 people or a group of like 2 people or whatever, like the raid size was minus 1 or 2, and you're really organized and you've done this raid a couple of times, you can apply to become a person that actually gets to walk a newer person through a raid. So like that way the random person can do it. But the queue time for that was like, I think the shortest I had seen it was like 30 minutes one day for being able to have someone walk me through a raid. If I want to do this, I need to have that dedicated group, and or I need to have a group that is, know a group that's already good enough. So it still had that issue that I had with Destiny 1 of, okay, I've got to get on Reddit to find players to play with to
LFG.
Be able to do the, yeah, to LFG, to find the group to be able to experience the quote unquote funnest part of the game. I just want to be able to do that in game. And now if you're making it so challenging that you need a highly skilled, organized group to do it, but you're a solo player most of the time, and that means you just absolutely have no choice but to not do it at all, I think there needs to be like a balance. And hopefully in this game, their raids are supposed to be like 16 man. So I'm hoping there's a little more wiggle room of how much balance there's going to need to be in Division for their in-game content. So it comes down to what the in-game is going to be and how the scaling system's going to work with things to say whether or not it'll be a great looter shooter or just a, yep, this is fun for its beginning. Now that I'm done with the main mission, though, I've done some of the side missions. They're getting kind of repetitive. Fall into that trap of looter shooter.
Right. We'll Which see. Wouldn't be a problem, but it's because these games are always trying to capture their audience or their player base for multiple years. Like in the words of Destiny and Anthem, 10-year plans that like Anthem's is what raises the bar so high.
Yeah, Anthem's not going to last. Poor EA.
No, yeah, EA fully expected Anthem to shit its bed or wet the bed, and that's why they pushed out Apex Legends early.
I guess that makes sense. Apex Legends probably not going to last either.
You really don't think so?
No, honestly, with what's happening in the real world at the moment.
Okay, so yeah, the New Zealand tragedy, yes. But do you really think it is?
Oh. Not the New Zealand tragedy, the, oh God, was it New Zealand? Some other country just banned loot boxes.
Oh, okay.
To the point of EA actually took out their, my teams are the league teams for all of their sports games, because that actually got banned too. So they can't even do like the, I forget what the actual like sports thing was, like my league or special league where you can get like the super fancy teams and you had to pay money for booster packs and things like that. Their main source of revenue for the sports titles just aren't in existence anymore.
I mean, I understand how big of a problem that could be, because like loot boxes, or if we want to use the term gacha, is like very much a money generator. But we have seen multiple companies in the past, and I'm not talking, or I mean, what is the meme? Riot Games, indie developer. But we've seen companies like Valve and Riot work on just a regular shop, a skin shop, a aesthetics shop, and do extremely well.
But do you think EA can / will?
So I can't say regarding the sports games, because I just don't know shit, Jack, all about that. But if you told me it was now an aesthetics shop, and that if you wanted a skin really bad, you could just dish out the $40 or however much it would need to be to get that skin. Like, yes, I think they could do fine doing that. And in addition, you keep the loot box element in and you make that something that you earn. So there's no monetary value that goes across. Loot boxes would probably be much less in, like, it would be a rarer occurrence. I mean, I guess that's the big thing, right? Loot boxes are illegal, if this is the same thing that had surfaced months ago too, but further passing through and getting banned for the same reasons. Loot boxes are illegal because it's gambling, because essentially you have to put money forward to open up the loot box or to get the key to the loot box or for the loot box itself. You open up the loot box and it could contain what you want or it couldn't, right?
Yeah.
So if you take out the money in the equation to that regard, because I'm not suggesting you just remove loot boxes entirely, because I think loot boxes are part of the addictive, like part of opening loot boxes is addictive. So you have to keep that in, but you have that as something you earn.
No, and that makes sense. It just comes down to, would EA, given its track record of you can fix it, but they never have, type of thing. So that's why I think Apex Legends is not going to, as much as I love Respawn and everything that they stand for, do you think EA will let it live in a non-loot box type of economy?
I think it'll be fine. I think you just sell aesthetics. Like, that is like if mobile games are essentially the prelude or precursor to console and PC gaming in terms of trends, that's absolutely what's going to happen. Like, you get aesthetics, you charge for guaranteed aesthetics, as I would put it. You make a shit ton of money off of that. You put guaranteed rewards in for your battle pass. I don't really know what the battle pass specifically is for Fortnite, but I understand the idea is you play the game after you get the battle pass, or you buy the battle pass afterwards. You hit milestones for prizes, right? And
something like that, maybe.
Yeah, and then you rake in on the prizes from the battle pass. And so as long as that doesn't have any sort of gambling element to it, it's just a milestone reward system, which, you know, already it has existed in mobile games for years at this point, which is, again, why I note that, like, I'm pretty sure basically everything we see for microtransactions are essentially already done in mobile gaming. Mobile gaming just basically
does it first.
Yeah, exactly. Because
cashes out, yep, on the larger population of gamers.
And well, and I mean, like, that's the whole thing. And I don't see a problem with that, especially because, like, as long as they are not prohibiting the actual gameplay behind a paywall, should be fine. And even if they did, if it was priced within a reasonable range, things like Final Fantasy 14 and World of Warcraft exist that use subscriptions to help pay for its operating costs. So this is me with very little insight or knowledge into the Apex Legends scene, but if you were to tell me that Apex Legends was going to die because of loot boxes and their legality issues, I would say that Fortnite would also be dying.
Well, I say it's going to die to loot boxes and the legality issues, because EA is very quick to pull the trigger of, okay, this one's dead. This one's dead, even though the game can still have that second life.
Yeah, we totally, like, I am the biggest proponent to saying that EA definitely buries people. I did way too much research on multiple occasions to, like, support my own thought on that. But usually they're cutthroat as long as the player base isn't there. And I mean a substantial player base. And as long as Apex Legends is raking in a shit ton of people or bringing in a shit ton of people to play, I think they're safe.
Only time will tell.
Yeah, as long as people play Apex Legends, it'll be fine. And this is, again, one of those things where, like, I keep hearing conflicting things about how much EA has
control over it versus how much they don't. Yeah,
right. Like, I mean, technically they own Respawn, so they should have full control, but it seems like, at least according to some reports, that Apex Legends is very much like, hey, you guys worry about Anthem, okay? you do your thing. But, like, it's obvious, though, even from the get-go, that this game got pushed out months before it was actually ready. And just luckily, Respawn is good at what they do, and the game's in a playable state. But, like, you gotta believe that they would have had a battle pass ready on release, if it released when it was meant to release.
I could see that, because, yeah, man, they are so good at releasing things, like, to have not a buggy-ass, crashy-ass system.
In everyone's defense, I am gonna say that, like, the bar is really low, thanks to PUBG.
Yeah.
And speaking about historically bug-ridden existences, as we alluded to earlier, Steam is taking a second punch at Epic Games. The Halo Master Chief Collection is coming to Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring up the whole bug thing because that game was broken for a while when it was on Xbox.
Nice.
It's not broken now, though.
What does the Epic Games Store have to, like, offer?
Exclusives.
Yeah.
Epic exclusives.
What exclusives does Epic... Metro Exodus, maybe?
Yeah, Metro Exodus. There's something else that's potentially going to be an exclusive now, too.
See, this is how I know I'm not a real PC gamer. Because none of this bothers me, because they all just come to the consoles. They either all come to the consoles, or they don't come to the consoles at all, and I never hear about them.
Borderlands 3 might be an Epic Games Store exclusive. That was the big one I remember reading.
Oh, yeah.
Been a long time since a Borderlands game came out.
That's going to be fun.
Did you ever get to play Borderlands 2 VR on PlayStation VR, Cookie?
No, because it was, unfortunately, early in the VR thing where they charge you full price for the game you already own. So they're like, oh, yeah, you liked Borderlands 2 and you own it, right? Cool. Here's just an expansion, i.e. a patch, but it's in VR. $59.99.
And no one's surprised. $60
for a game that's,
well.
Yeah, $60 for a game that's selling on Steam at $9.99.
Yeah.
Or I think for certain sales now, $4.99.
Higgs, yeah. Doom VR, $59.99.
Oof. I wanted to go ahead and apply an Anthem update. Metacritic, their user scores now range for PC at the highest of 4.3 to PlayStation 4 at the lowest of 3.8.
So now the public is
the long slide backwards. but it also started with a pretty low ceiling to start. But the PC has 3,160 ratings. Which is a pretty massive distribution.
To get back on topic with the Master Chief Collection.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Did you have news?
Back to power.
Well,
suits.
I mean, I think this is pretty big. I mean, I honestly wish I had more details about how this transaction transpired, I guess, initially, too, because I did not expect anything from Microsoft to end up on the Steam store when you have the perfectly fine Windows store right next to it, right?
What are you talking about? Perfectly fine.
Yeah, there's a little bit of...
Don't you refuse to open that?
There's a little bit of tongue in my cheek right now. And yes, I do refuse to open it, considering it killed my computer once already. I have since replaced the hard drive. Thanks, Windows Store.
So you just consider it super huge news because there's kind of that interplay?
Yeah, I mean, let's ignore like the Microsoft image discussion, because I think this is actually a huge thing for their PR. I mean, whether or not that's actually what the intention was, the idea of getting Microsoft exclusives onto Steam is the absolute biggest thing, because it further drives home the idea that one day console exclusivity will just not exist at all. I mean, one day consoles won't exist potentially too, but like, that's kind of an argument or a thing that's kind of been muted ever since the success of Xbox One and PlayStation 4, of course.
It's going to be, I think, still a long road to having a do-it-all computer that is easy for like anybody within the masses to purchase and start using for all of its functions, while having little like technological literacy.
And I think it goes a long way to in saying that like, if there was some sort of deal between Steam and Microsoft to get this that was heated up by Epic Games, it also offers the possible consolation prize that Epic Games can do whatever it wants in terms of exclusivities, which I think are honestly bad for the market in the short term. But if that further drives competition, then it's good for the market long term.
Yeah, consumers having access to products through multiple sources, I think, is always going to be a plus.
I also thought you guys liked Halo more than I did, so I thought this was more newsworthy.
I'm actually pretty damn excited, because I've played Halo Reach, and I've played Halo 3, and I've played 5 hours of ODST, I think, and... Not
I've played five hours of ODST too.
Yeah, and not 5 hours of someone who's good at Halo playing ODST, so therefore getting relatively far, but like 5 hours of trying to grind through probably the first hour and a half experience, because I am shit at Halo.
Wasn't ODST you're playing as a peon Halo?
Yeah. Well, you're playing as a non-Spartan.
So you're still not like a peon, but you're still pretty badass. There's still like people below you. You've got kind of Spartan armor-ish.
Yeah, you're like, I'm trying to think. You're like not an army grunt, but a Marine and not a Navy SEAL. You know what I mean? Like you, I don't know if I want to give the Marines that much. Maybe you're like Special Forces, but you're not a Green Beret like Master Chief. But you're also not a Marine.
You're like SEAL Team 4 as opposed to 6.
I don't know the difference.
I think SEAL Team 4 and 6 are in the same category.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if you're a SEAL Team, you're you're on a different caliber.
It's just that SEAL Team 6, was that not the team that...
That took out Osama bin Laden?
So.
Yeah, it was.
That was the SEAL Team that found the hole in the ground. That's pretty much all they did. Anyway, not to throw shade, but... Yeah... Halo exists. The last Halo, I hear, was really, really, really bad. But it was also on PC.
What?
What Halo are we talking about?
What?
Also, this Master Chief Collection, I believe, ends at Halo 4. So it's Reach 1, 2, 3, ODST 4.
5.
I don't think 5
is the most recent one. That was an Xbox One exclusive.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know if it was bad. I think a lot of people just didn't want to play as Idris Elba.
Locke? Oh.
Yes, Locke. Isn't it okay. Idris Elba? Was that not his actor?
I don't know. I don't know who Nathan Fillion plays.
We need
resident expert Matt back to help with Halo stuff, because he's the only one who knows what the hell's going on.
Regardless, though, I think it's...
I'm not a Halo person.
Let's put it this way. I didn't hear anything bad about the game aside from playing as Locke for half of it, Where in contrast, the last Gears of War, I heard only bad things. So,
I was going to say, it seems like critics loved Halo 5, but the user score is a 6.4.
Let's also not forget that this is like a really, really competitive community when it comes to like the PvP. So,
yeah,
it's like Melee, for instance. Are we really going to say that Smash Wii was so bad of a game that it deserves like a super shitty score, and just that it didn't live up to the Melee hype?
We're talking about Super Smash Brothers Brawl, right? Because I think
that's the Wii one.
The Wii U, yeah. Smash 4, which was for the Wii U, was actually pretty damn good. Like, yeah. I don't think there
wasn't Melee, but.
And then Smash Ultimate took a bunch of competitive Smash players and had them as like consultants for the development of the game. So that's why it feels so goddamn good to play.
And it knocked Melee out of Evo for 2019.
Supposedly, kind of. Huge, I mean, like, it was one of the mini games that did, yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it replaced for the main stage.
And speaking of which, how do you feel about that, Cookie?
That's exciting for me. I'm bummed that we get Samurai Showdown on the main stage and not Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yeah.
But I'm also excited that we get Samurai Showdown on the main stage. Because the game's going to be out for like 2 months, and then it's already at Evo.
Which, remember,
main stage.
Is it not just me, or has Evo in the past said that games were too new to have them?
I don't remember that. But I also don't keep up on like a lot of like news for these things before the last couple of years. But I could see Evo saying that.
I don't remember what game it was, but I'm pretty sure they had a game that they rejected, and it might have been Skullgirls. It might have been Skullgirls as being too new, and so they didn't have it on Evo.
Well, the only Samurai Combat game I'm looking forward to is coming out next Friday, March 22nd. Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's coming out.
Yeah.
I really didn't want to get hyped about it, and then I watched
I haven't
20
looked
minutes
into
of gameplay.
Anything about it since like almost 6 months ago.
Okay. So I'm not going to tell you anything in terms of spoilers, but instead just gameplay, and not even like descriptions.
Was the Shadows Die Twice one the one that looked interesting, or the one that you guys said was from the interesting software developer?
It's from software.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not the one that actually looked interesting for me.
You like the
more
Japanese
the other one.
Samurai sword? Why are we talking with bad accents? One.
Yeah, that's right.
The one where it was like beautiful and fast paced. No, that was Shadows Die Twice, right?
No. Well, no. I mean, it's beautifully grimy, beautifully ugly. If that's what you want to say.
What was the other game then called?
Ghost of Tsushima.
Yes, perfect.
Thank you.
So
you're welcome.
Yes, Ghost of Tsushima is the one I want to play.
Okay, so just talking from a mechanical standpoint, from like the 15 minutes or whatever I watched, there was no plot or anything like that. The game is faster than Bloodborne, looks more punishing, and you have traversal tools. I'm not going to say anything about what it is, but it kind of reminds me like a different take on Bionic Commando.
Okay, that's the one I wanted to play. So yes, that is an exciting thing. Ghost of Tsushima is not the one I'm watching the video now.
It looks way too good. And I've got so many games I want to play. So I'm trying to just be like, no, Neil,
yeah,
don't.
I've been actually holding off on some indie purchases in anticipation for Sekiro, because I'm like, oh yeah, I need to shell out $60 in a week to like play the next From Software game that's not Armored Core.
We were recording Resident Evil 2 at John's place two days ago, Thursday, mm-hmm. which you will find on the channel later this week, at least part one or two.
Unless he gets hit by aforementioned Truck.
Yes, exactly. Truck Coon. Unless Truck Coon decides to teleport me to Hold on to this point in a second, because I have a story after this before we wrap the podcast up, or after the podcast, unless Truck Coon sends me to a different world where an isekai.
Your smartphone.
Oh my god, we need to write a light novel.
Okay, so we talked about Sekiro for a second. Neither of us have really like looked into the story, but the one thing John said to me that I found interesting was, I hope it gets weird as fuck, or something to that extent, paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And I actually thought to myself, I was like, what if it's not? What if it's like a really traditional story?
No, I don't think it can be. I think it already has to be weird as fuck because of the mechanics that they're going to implement into it with the resurrection system, as well as the fact that you have a multi-tool arm.
Like, I mean, I understand that, but part of me also just wants a From Software game with, like, it doesn't have to be simple, but it doesn't have to be crazy. That's when not super crazy eldritch or sinister plot. Like, I am really curious what From Software could make if the narrative was, like, more traditional in its storytelling, too.
I don't know. They
gave that up with the robotic arm.
I mean, they gave that up with King's Field, I think. That's probably the truth of the matter.
I mean, Bloodborne is an incredibly dark and like sinister plot, and I adore it. And I really do think that Bloodborne has, after playing it again this last year, has really solidified itself as my favorite From Software game. But I don't think that Dark Souls actually isn't all that sinister at its core for some of them. There, I think Dark Souls 2 tried to strike a more sinister element, especially with the implementation of darkness.
You're right.
We don't need to go super far, but like each one strikes a little different tone.
I guess like the impression I was trying to give is that like I don't want, or it's not that I don't want, I'm just curious if they will provide a story that is not so cryptic, is the better way to put it.
Oh,
that'd
okay.
be nice. Then I can actually like play a game.
I don't have to wait a year for someone to break it all down because they actually read the item descriptions and looked at context clues.
I mean, what if you had like Nintendo or The Legend of Zelda's lead writer, like, and I mean specifically story, like writer, work on a From Software game, and then you just had From Software's lead writer right behind him at every point in time being like, hey, why don't you do this too? Just how about you put a body right here? Like, what do you think if we had a hand, just a disembodied hand right there? Like,
right?
Would
and
that
then
be the
four...
writer or the
well, not
just like one of the random designers?
I mean, yeah, maybe
or a producer,
maybe there's that
technically
too.
Producer or a director. Even
I would just be curious because like every Zelda game for the most part has like no problem telling its story whether it's basic or not.
Because it uses dialogue.
Yeah, but what if
not
you
just what are you buying?
what if you try and you have that severed hand, but then there's a wrist guard that just happens to match the piece of cloth that's next to the hand 40 hours later in the game. And then you can contextualize that belonged to the hand, and this hand has traveled the world, and now you know everything about the hand and who it belonged to, and it turns out he's actually the final boss of the game.
Oh. And it turns out after you beat him, you take off his mask and it's actually you.
Okay, yeah. I could be having a really bad
good stroke
game bad or game a really bad like memory flash. Because it could have either been a dream of me watching the Sekiro gameplay video, or it could have actually been the video. But I will say, I do think that there is actually a mechanic in which you are using different hands.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
Or at least, like, your hand is going to give you an additional tool, but it's probably going to be like a bonfire system where you have to equip that tool at the start of that life.
Or maybe you were literally picking up the hands in the middle of combat.
That could be horrifying.
Maybe.
Who knows?
I think you had a bad trip on a dream.
No, I am like pretty sure it's a thing. Like,
so why would you pick up just a normal human being's hand?
So you're not picking up hands. And again, it could be a different game. Like maybe I'm actually thinking of Devil May Cry right now, because I think I might be. But, because, you, no, actually, I think I am.
Sweet.
I'm worried that we've hit the fever dream portion of the podcast and need to cut it.
If you know what Neil is talking about, please don't hesitate to write in at podcast@fancyramen.com.
Oh, Cookie, you're not going to read the reviews that are now on the iTunes website?
Are there more reviews?
Why don't you look that up? And while you do that, I'm going to tell you guys about the biggest mistake in manga. So there's
upstairs.
You can probably do it through their website, in fact.
iTunes has a particularly like punishing structure.
Okay.
When it comes to
all right. I'm going to look it up while you guys are doing this. Or while what I talk this? About the isekai, the new isekai manga I just discovered. Maybe I've talked about this before. I don't think I have, though. But the manga follows literally Truck-kun. The guy is part of a interdimensional company in which his job is to run over people to transport them to other worlds.
Oh my god, yes! What is this called? Send it to me.
I'll have to find it again, but it's
so bad. That's super interesting to me.
Oh, son of a gun. It's not on their website. I have to actually
download iTunes. And yeah, that's not happening on this computer. I'll go while you start doing the outro.
We're fine.
I'll go
grab we're fine. I think it's kind of a little mean anyways to read reviews on air. Or it seems like, I don't know. I feel like the idea is that like it's not very forward facing.
Why is it not forward facing to read reviews online?
Because even people have to take us at our word for saying we are only reading bad reviews.
But what if we get good reviews too? We just read all the reviews. And actually, we just thank the person for reviewing.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, it would be like a matter of trust that we are, quote unquote, actually reading all of the reviews.
We've got nothing to lose.
We've got six, probably, at this point. It sounds like you saw one.
I saw two, so.
Yeah. We're at seven? I'll be back.
And that does it for this episode of Fancy Ramen Podcast. Episode 111, I believe. I think the adequate name for this episode is Maps.
Maps!
Have a great week, everybody.
Bye.